This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Fixing Child Protective Services, that's been named a top priority for the Texas legislature. A judge has found that the CPS foster care program was systematically violating the rights of the children and that these children were worse off for having become wards of the state. So how to fix it? What about the money? Why are we still having this conversation? What are the underlying problems? We're talking about it this hour on The Source. We're going to open up the phones a little bit later to get your comments. But first, yesterday I spoke with San Antonio State Representative Democrat Ina Mijares of District 124 about fixing child protective services.
It is a huge priority. I think it was a big wake-up call to the state to finally start addressing the issues that have been impacting children in foster care. At the end of the day, there are several lawmakers, including myself, that are making the foster care reform a priority. But this is something that I think especially Speaker Strauss has called it one of his most important priorities for the 85th session.
Speaker Strauss talked about that children who are wards of the state that Texas is taking care of should not have to spend the night in an office.
I agree, right. You know, I was, before I became a representative, I was an ad litem attorney for children who were in the CPS system. And I recall having clients, children, sleeping in CPS offices in Bexar County. So this has been a problem that's been going on for several years. It's just not something that has happened within the last year.
Okay, so maybe you can describe how that actually works if you have that depth of knowledge. Is there a room for these kids? What do they actually do?
Well, you know, essentially what happens is if there's not a placement for the child, if there's not a relative, if there's not a foster care family available, or even placement like St. PJ's in San Antonio, for example, is one of the children's shelters, the caseworker, will have the child, they'll find a place sometimes in their office, and they just try to set up maybe somewhere to sleep for that child, and they work around the clock to find placement. But unfortunately, there will be times where they're days on end that placement is not available. And unfortunately, those offices are not kid-friendly. They're not beautiful offices. They're white walls. They're very cold. It's just a government building. So it's very traumatic for a child that's taken from a home, what they're familiar with, relatives that they're familiar with, and taken into, an office to sleep and not knowing where they're going to end up next.
And there has been a lot of problems with CPS and Child Protective Services over the years, particularly in regards to the caseworkers. We see that many of them have so many cases. There's problems sometimes with supervision with the caseworkers. And last, I think it was May, that they dropped the provision that caseworkers had to have a degree so that you could hire more. And now there's talk that maybe that's a problem that should be legislated, that you have to have a degree in this field. Is that something that you can talk about?
Sure. When I first heard the commissioner mention not requiring degrees, I'll admit I was very concerned because I did not know, what did that mean? Is it going to allow someone right out of high school to take on a job that is, number one, demanding, number two, that requires a skill and a specific skill and knowledge of knowing how to handle children in the system and knowing the system's ins and outs. So I was definitely concerned about that, and had asked the commissioner in a work group about why he decided to do that. And he had suggested that there are people that are of adult age that may not have had a degree but maybe have specific training and knowledge working with children, whether maybe in the nonprofit world or other areas, that would be a good fit for CPS. So there are pros and cons to it. I think they need to be careful on how they word the requirement of that specific job, of what's going to be required of that person. My concern is taking an 18-year-old out of high school and placing them in that specific role So there are concerns, but again, I want to make sure that when it's drafted, that if it's something that's going to be presented to the legislature, you know, they've got to make sure that it's worded well, that there are safeguards in place to make sure that the person is qualified to be in that particular position.
Well, it seems like anyone who finds himself as becomes a caseworker for Child Protective Services, that they have a passion.
Yes.
They are motivated to do something. You know, they went to school. They got a degree in social work. They have learned about the complex issues that are behind many of these children, families that where drug addiction is an issue, domestic violence is an issue, all sorts of uncertainty and stresses there. Having that gone through that degree program, they're going to have more tools in order to help those children.
I agree exactly, and you know when I was working with children in the CPS system as an attorney, you know I saw the caseworkers, and a lot of them they have a passion for this type of work. They went to school to get degrees in that particular area. And unfortunately, you know, many of those caseworkers we lost because, you know, the pay wasn't enough. The stress was very high. We had quality, very gifted caseworkers that ended up leaving to pursue another profession because, you know, they burn out. They burn out. They're not paid sufficiently. And, you know, I hope that this is something that we can definitely address because we've lost, you know, incredibly talented caseworkers that really, you know, devoted their lives to making sure these kids were protected and taken care of. And unfortunately, we've lost them to other professions.
We know, of course, that the legislature is all about trying to make the budget work. And the question is there going to be enough political will in order to find the money to fund CPS at a level that it needs to be at?
I think the initial steps have been taken, especially on behalf of Speaker Strauss. He has diligently gone and done what he's needed to do to try to find extra funding. I see it on the part of the governor and the lieutenant governor. It's not enough. This is just the first step. And, you know, unfortunately, the way I personally feel is we're not going to be able to address every single problem in the CPS system this particular legislative session. We have to continuously be working on this beyond the 85th legislative session. And so, you know, we've got to look at funding is one. You know, we are looking at a very tight budget, but I believe that we're taking the steps needed to really look at the issues at hand and how we're going to address them. But again, I want to stress that this is just the beginning. You know, we're looking at a system that has been flawed, that has had its problems for a very, very long time. And so we are going to have to all come together and look at how we're going to address these issues and work diligently in addressing them.
So when Governor Abbott says that part of the solution will be reaching out to faith-based groups, asking them to step up and maybe become foster care parents, is that a solution?
I think it's part of a solution. I don't think that's the only solution. You know, we've got to, I definitely believe in getting the community as a whole involved, not just faith-based organizations. You know, we're looking at, you know, in San Antonio, for example, we look at St. PJ's. There's different nonprofits. There's different businesses and corporations that are starting to see, you know, the negative impact that has been felt in the community because of the problems with CPS. And so it's going to take the community as a whole to address the issue.
That was State Representative Ina Mijares, a Democrat from San Antonio's District 124. We're talking about the problems of Child Protective Services and what the legislature needs to do to find a fix. When we come back, we open up the phones, 210-614-8980, and we continue the conversation. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Child Protective Services and the foster care program here in Texas, which were declared unconstitutional for violating the civil rights of the children because, According to a judge, they were being harmed by the state's system. The Texas legislature is looking for solutions now that they are in session. Many are wondering if they have the political will to put enough money into the system, or will it be another Band-Aid? We're joined by Katie Ulz. She's the executive director for the Texas Alliance for Child and Family Services, and Annette Rodriguez, president and the CEO of the Texas Children's Shelter here in San Antonio, and Kathy Friend, a foster mom of more than 18 years, mainly dealing with infants born with substances in their system. And we invite you into our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And you can email questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. Well, let me ask you, Katie, first off, executive director of the Texas Alliance for Child and Family Services. How bad is it really when you have to describe it to somebody that they say it's in crisis? Well, what do you mean it's in crisis?
Well, thank you. And thank you for having us today and for tackling this very important issue. The child protection system in Texas is very complex. There's a state system, and they oversee all of the child abuse and neglect investigations, working with families, working with courts. There's a lot of partners involved in this system. And when tragedies occur, as I know this community has experienced, the gut instinct is for everyone to rush to solve whatever particular problem that was, invest in that, throw resources at that, fix those policies that may have gaps or deficiencies. Then what happens to the rest of the system is things tend to maybe get worse there because resources and attention have been focused elsewhere. So I think what the case is with the system now is a lot of attention has been focused on investigations and shoring those up. The legislature's responded to an urgent need that the states brought to them. And we represent the foster care side of things. We work directly with children for whom the court has determined they cannot stay at home with their moms and dads. It is not safe. They've been victims of abuse or neglect, or at very significant risk of being abused or neglected. The courts remove those children and place them in the state's conservatorship. And then we, providers who are all over the state, take care of those kids. We make sure they have all the services they need. We tuck them in at night. We help them with their homework. We help them cope with the trauma of the abuse and neglect. And the foster care and services side of the system is historically and severely underfunded. And so we are scrambling every day to make ends meet to provide these kids with the services they need. And what's happened is over time that underfunding has left the state without enough capacity to meet the needs of these children, without the quality, innovative, effective services and programming that these children need. And we've got too many kids sleeping in CPS offices or in psychiatric hospitals or sleeping in beds that really can't best meet their needs. So I think the time is very critical, and I applaud the legislature, the governor, lieutenant governor, and your own Speaker Strauss for indicating this will be a high priority this legislative session.
How many kids are we talking about?
On any given day around the state, there's probably multiple children that are not in a foster care bed that can best meet their needs.
Well, how many are in the foster care system? About
30,000, give or take.
We're talking about from like infants, newborns, to
right.
A day before you're 18.
That's right. And in recent years, the state is very lucky to have such a large number of families step up to say, we're going to help take care of our own kids. So the state does a very good job of keeping children with their relatives. So over 40% of kids that are in the state's conservatorship are actually placed with relatives under the oversight of the State Department of Family and Protective Services. Kids that can't be safely placed with relatives are in paid foster care. And the population of children in paid foster care has gotten more complex. The needs of those kids have increased. They are higher needs kids. They need more therapeutic interventions. They need more trauma-informed care. So the way we take care of them has changed in recent years.
I'm going to take a phone call here. The number is 210-614-8980. If you want to join our conversation, you are invited, like Mary here. And Mary, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a pediatric ER physician and have been for 25 years, so I see the physical and sexual abuse right on the front lines. I also, in this last year, worked with a shelter that took a group of foster children that were in a long-term care facility who were being neglected and needed and required shelter for a month. And so I saw the other end of the spectrum as well, which is the children who have been in foster care for a long period of time but haven't had their needs met. And I would say to everyone listening that why would we do anything short of a major overhaul of this system? Is there any more important issue? Is there any issue that should be bipartisan than us taking care of children that aren't getting taken care of? So why would we even consider doing any kind of Band-Aids during this legislative session? Why aren't we doing a total and complete overhaul? And that means having a committee with everyone involved on the front lines determining what's needed to make this a program that we can be proud of. And the issue of kids staying overnight in the care of the offices is the least of the issue. The issues are kids getting to appropriate child psychiatrists, which they cannot get to. They cannot get placed on medication that would help them with their rage. Our CPS workers, we need to completely make this a program where it's an honor to be one. It is a respected position that pays well and that has good benefits with reasonable caseloads. There are ways to do this if our state and our and the people in the state decide to make it a priority. And that is all I want to say today.
Well, Mary, thank you for your call. We appreciate that. So when we talk about overhauling the system, well, what exactly does that mean? We got to figure out where the problems are, understanding the way the system works now, where it doesn't work, and what needs to be done in order to make it work at a higher standard. And Annette Rodriguez, you have a view of what's happening as president and CEO of the Texas Children's Shelter here in San Antonio. You're providing care, foster care for these children, but yet you lose money in the process. So probably, I guess, one easy fix, it would be, you know, let's make it so that you don't lose money trying to provide this essential service.
That's right, David. And I also want to thank Mary for her call. I couldn't agree with her more. The Children's Shelter has been in our community for over 100 years, providing care to children who've been abused, abandoned, and neglected. And one of the things that I've been most proud of before I worked there and even now as I work there is that the Children's Shelter has always gone above and beyond what we call minimum standards. So when we see that a child has a specific need, we make sure that we fill that need. And one of the most recent programs, Mary spoke about psychiatric services and therapeutic needs, we've been able to open our Harvey Najem Hope Center that does exactly that. We're able to provide therapeutic services, therapy that are specific to children who've been abused, abandoned, and neglected, and we help them heal. We help get to the root cause of their trauma so that they can function like every other child deserves to function, so they can be successful in school and successful in life. But to your point, that those funds, the funds that we get from the state, don't cover that. And so when you look at our emergency shelter, we currently provide care to over 400 children every single year, who range in age from newborns, sometimes right out of the hospital.
Is that 400 on any given day or 400?
Across the year.
Across the year. On any given day, though, how many kids do you have there?
Today, we have 43.
Okay.
And we average about 43 to 45 children, but we're licensed to serve up to 66. And when you look at the reimbursement rate from the state, we get $129 per child for care. But when you look at what our actual cost is for the children's shelter specifically, because we do go above and beyond and provide additional resources and what we call wraparound services, we're looking at a true cost of close to $220. And so we have to make up the difference, and we do that by fundraising. And we shouldn't expect our community to always come up with those dollars. One of the things that I always tell people when they ask me about that gap is I said, if you've got children of your own, would you send them to school with only 80 cents in their pocket, knowing that it costs a dollar to eat lunch? And you're hoping that the teacher or a friend will give them the extra 20 cents so that they can eat. Well, of course you wouldn't do that. Why would we do that with our kids that are in foster care?
So when you say that 400 children throughout the year, about 40 on any given day, so that means you have children who are coming in and out all the time, transitioning through. They're not intended to stay there for a long period of time?
Correct. When they come in at all hours of the day and night.
They show up with what?
With nothing, whatever they're wearing on their backs.
They don't have like a suitcase or a garbage bag full of stuff?
No, there's no time for that. If they're being removed from their home, it's usually not a pleasant situation. And or if they're being removed from police, again, it's not a very pleasant situation. And so they're coming with whatever they had on their little backs. And we have to clothe them, feed them, educate them, and help them heal. And
what kind of state are these kids in?
Well, if they're old enough to understand what's happening, they're scared. There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of fear. And so it's our job to create a trauma-informed environment where they can understand what's happening to them, but also they feel safe with the individuals that surround them and are caring for them. And they stay with us for about 45 days. And during that time, CPS and also our children's court judges are deciding what's going to happen to them. And some of them will go back to relatives, like Katie mentioned, but others will enter the foster care system and go into foster homes. And we also have a foster care program that serves close to 300 children.
So the state's intention, they want to put a priority in keeping families together. So they really want to find relatives that will take them in and care for these children in a proper way. But if not, then they find foster parents. And foster parents, those are hard to come by. But Kathy Friend, you're here. You've been a foster mom for more than 18 years. How many children have you fostered?
We've fostered 33 children in all in over the 18 years.
And so how does that happen that they show up at your house, they call you up, or the kids, what does that work?
Either the children's shelter calls us or the CPS worker calls us. Actually, it would be the investigative worker who's investigating the case. And they either ask us if we would accept a particular child or infant, or if we would meet them at the hospital to accept a child and check it right out of the newborn nursery or the NICU if it's been a child that's been born drug exposed. And then we take them home. And we love them, and we treat them as if they are our own. And when they leave our house, they leave with a suitcase, usually two suitcases, because we're very generous with our own children and with our foster children who we treat as our own.
Yeah, for me, if I was a kid being, shuffled around and had to put all of my belongings in a garbage bag, it would make me feel like I'm garbage. Having a suitcase that you provide like that, that does a lot for that kid.
Well, and Dave, I always say to my friends who will say to me, why do you foster? What is the big deal? You guys are almost ready to retire. Why are you still doing this? And one of my responses is, we're blessed to be able to do this. These kids need us. We love kids, and so we want to continue to do this. But the other example I give to them is, imagine someone walks into your home tonight, Dave, knocks on your door and says, Dave, you need to come with us. You can't live here anymore, but we're going to go take you to Kathy's house, and that's where you're going to stay. Don't pack anything. Don't get your favorite shirt. Nothing. You need to just come with us. What would that do to you, Dave? How would you feel? You're an adult. You can figure out a way to work through that. 2-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 14-year-old, they don't have the capacity or the tools to work through that, which is why they end up needing so many services, the mental health services, the medical services that they may not have been provided, and to even be taught what it is to be in a family that loves you and doesn't hit you or tell you you can't eat for the next 2 days because you didn't make your bed right or you didn't do something else correctly. So they come in with no trust. They come in not knowing even how to trust and what a family is. And that goes right down to the infants, because the drugs that the moms take while the child is in utero affects them then and for the rest of their life.
So when there are people who consider, like, I want to be a foster parent, they must think this is going to be really, really hard. I don't know if I'm up for this. And then that the children are going to be so already, it's going to require maybe more than I can give. We're going to talk about that. We're going to take a quick break. Our phone lines are open. We want to hear from the community as we have this community conversation about the foster care system, CPS in Texas, and how to fix it. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. This is The Source on your Texas public radio station. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Fixing child protective services, it's been named a top priority for the Texas legislature. A judge has found that the CPS foster care program was systematically violating the rights of the children, and that the children were sometimes worse off for having gone through become wards of the state. How to fix that? What about the money? Where is that going to come from? Why are we still having this conversation? What is the underlying problem? We're talking about it this hour on Texas Public Radio on The Source, and you're invited in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. When we went to break, we were hearing from Kathy Friend, and you were telling us about your experience being a foster mom, and I was asking about, I mean, people are probably very shy about stepping up to take that responsibility. How much training, what kind of training did you get before when you become a foster mom?
We got a lot of training, and we continue to get training. As a licensed foster parent, you are required to take 30 hours a year of continuing training, and that is for you and your husband or life partner, whoever it is that's doing the fostering in your home. But to become a foster parent, there is a lot of training that takes place, and it takes about 4 to 6 months to complete the process. And it's a good process. You learn things that you never even imagined were necessary to know. My husband and I thought how to deal with a child that's been sexually abused. What are the signs to look for? The first time you get a child that has had that done to them, it's just unimaginable to me, period. But to have that in your home and have to know how to help them and how to deal with it, it's a process. But with the children's shelter, we get amazing training on how to deal with that, as well as the resources that are at the shelter itself to continue to help us and help the child deal with what's happened to them so that they themselves don't grow up to repeat that offense to others.
So I mean, you could have children who are so young, they really haven't even been potty trained yet, and they have been sexually abused.
Oh, yes.
And then you have to deal with them at that level, and then there's still that issue.
Yes. Dave, we've had a 2-year-old come into our home and the younger sibling who was an infant, and that 2-year-old knew how to change that diaper and make a bottle. We had to teach that 2-year-old how to be a 2-year-old. And to not be the mom anymore. She used to look at our floor and say, "You don't have holes in your floor. Where are your holes? I need to see down there." Not everybody has holes in their floors, baby. We don't, and it's okay, and that's not the norm. So we literally had to teach her, and with the help of the children's shelter, we were able to teach her how to be a child so that she could have those childhood years and learn from them before she had to start acting like an adult 16 years later.
Let's go to the phone lines. Ariana has called in. Ariana, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm calling as somebody who actually aged out of foster care. And I went in twice, once when I was 8, and then again when I was 12. The first time I went in, it was for every type of abuse that you can think of. However, when I went in, I didn't get the help that I needed, which is one of the areas that y'all are talking about needing reform, and I totally agree with that. However, I went back into custody of my adoptive parents, and then from there I was shipped all over the country to keep, basically for them to abandon me until I put my foot down when I was 12 and I said, I'm not going anywhere else. Call the state of Texas, get custody, take it away. Thankfully, Texas stepped in, and they did take me away. And I aged out of foster care, and from what I've been told, I am actually a statistical anomaly. Because with everything that I've been through, I never did drugs. I don't have a record. I actually own my own business now. So somewhere, something went right. But listening to this show really got to me, and I had to call in.
Well, I'm really glad you did, Ariana. Thank you so much for sharing with that. We appreciate that, and I'm so glad that you're doing a lot better now. Thank you.
Thanks.
Let me ask you, Katie Oles, you're the executive director of the Texas Alliance for Child and Family Services. We're looking at Austin as they try to come up with a fix for the foster care program. What is on your wish list for a fix? Mm-hmm.
Yes, so the legislature is in session and it's still early, but we're really encouraged and hopeful about the level of attention that child protection issues are already getting and the express commitment by leadership in the state to address the needed issues. So our wish list is that the legislature will to listen to the experts, to take into account all the issues, to adequately fund the system, to incentivize the innovation and programming that we want to bring to the system, to stop the cycle and address the unique needs of children that are victims of abuse and neglect, and to work with their families. We're closely watching and looking at Senate Bill 11 that is authored by Senator Schwertner and co-authored by Senator Jane Nelson and Senator Uresti here from San Antonio. We think that bill is a really good bill, and we know it's going to be evolving as it goes through the process, but it includes provisions that bring more accountability to the system. It has provisions around capacity building, and one of the biggest provisions in the bill is to transfer case management functions to the people like Annette and the Children's Shelter who are directly working with the children and families to allow them to have more control over the services for those children.
Well, let me ask you about that then. Annette Rodriguez, President and CEO of the Texas Children's Shelter here in San Antonio. Case management, so is there like a bureaucracy? I'm guessing it's Texas. It's going to be a bureaucracy. They're trying to sort of pare that down and let you do you.
Yes. And what we're looking at, what Commissioner Whitman with Department of Family and Protective Services has proposed, is transferring that responsibility. Currently, it belongs to the state. The state comes in and they decide where the child goes. They have to sign off on every service that's being provided. They sign off even on the medication that some of these children are needing to take and having to take. And by transferring that, you're localizing the power of the authority. And if you look at the number of children in foster care, we've got 30,000 children in foster care. 90% of those children are residing with providers like the Children's Shelter. We know these kids. These kids are living with us either in our residential programs or in our foster homes. So when it comes time to advocating and being their voice, we can do that. We can do that the best. And we know what resources they need, and we know our communities. We know what's out there, and we know which providers and what services are available to our children, and we can mobilize that. So I'm complete favor of having case management responsibilities turned over to the providers, so that we can create individualized plans for these children so that we can help them heal and help them become successful.
Back to the phones with Daniel. And Daniel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. My question, I guess my relation to this, I volunteered in the past with here locally in San Antonio with certain organizations that cater toward foster kids and displaced children and families. And my takeaway from it, from not coming from a family from that, but volunteering, I felt there was more of a systematic, I guess, error in the process that how we're handling the children. And it's really more of we're not handling them as humans, as people. It's more of a check box that we checked on, that we completed something or we did this. And it's more of a process that's, I guess, less human. Is that part of the problem? Is it a systematic issue or is it a funding issue? Is if there's more money put into this program, is it just exacerbate the issues that we currently have? Do we need to go back to how we're addressing foster care as a whole, not just in Texas, but nationally?
All right, Daniel, thank you for the question. Katie Oles?
Sure, yeah, thank you, Daniel. I think the state system is plagued with high turnover and high caseloads. And as caseworkers leave caseloads and they have to be distributed to others. They may not know the children. They may not know the family. They do the best they can. Allowing a provider who knows these children, works with these children every day, to develop individualized plans that address the child and the family's needs, I think will help get us better outcomes.
But more money is always good. It helps. How would that make a difference, Annette Rodriguez, if suddenly the state of Texas actually paid, for taking care of these children?
Well,
entirely.
Fully funding the system is the only way to go. We've got providers who we need the beds. We need the foster homes. We need the beds because we know that we're removing, you know, thousands of children across the state of Texas. By providing or fully funding the system, we know that quality will go up, and we know we can depend.
How will quality go up?
Well, right now, we have certain standards. So you take the children's shelter, for example. We go above and beyond because that's what we choose to do as an organization. There are some providers out there who have smaller budgets, who may not have the presence that a larger organization may have, and so they may not be able to provide some of those wraparound services. So being able to fully fund the program or fund the system would allow some of our smaller providers to access and or create some additional services for the children that they're serving.
But, you know, so, I mean, when you only get paid 80% of what it takes to care for a child, then there are people on staff don't get paid adequately, or things just don't get done sometimes. You got to push it next to the next budget. It's just
we hope and see
type of a program.
We look for efficiencies, and unfortunately, sometimes some of the fast food restaurants are paying at the same rate that we're paying our direct care staff, and so we would love to be able to increase the pay for those that are caring directly with our children.
And that would have a direct impact on improving the quality of care that the children receive.
Absolutely, because we could reduce turnover in our residential facilities, which then adds consistency and helps build strong relationships.
All right. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be back and we'll take these phone calls. Mona, we'll take you when we come back from this quick break. If you want to join the conversation, our line is 210-614-8980. We're talking about the Texas Child Protective Services Foster Care Program, a side of it that you don't normally hear about, where the children go, the foster parents, the foster programs here in San Antonio, and their challenges and what they hope to see out of the coming legislative session. 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're talking about the foster care program in Texas, part of Child Protective Services, and something that is getting an overhaul in the state legislature. But how is that going to happen, and what sort of political will is there in Austin in order to fund it adequately? If you got a question or a comment, the number is 210-614-8980. Mona has called in. Let's get her on the air. Hi, Mona. Thanks for waiting, and you're on the air.
Alrighty, thank you so much. Thanks for taking my call. I'm concerned about why it is so hard to become a foster parent. I've tried so many times, and I don't understand it. I'm single for 25 years, but I raised a son. I take care of all kinds of kids. I'm a nanny now. I worked for an airline for 29 years. And every time I try to do it, I get, you know, saying that I don't have a big enough apartment, I don't have this, I don't have that. I'm single. I don't know if that's been an issue. And I haven't tried lately because I kind of gave up on it. But, you know, I know people that do it just for the money, and I'm wondering how they got accepted into the program. So I'm really concerned because there's so many kids out there, and I've got a lot of love to give. And, you know, even if it's just one little baby, I know a lot of single parents that have a one-bedroom apartment and they're raising a child. So,
okay, Mona. Well, thank you. Thank you for that call. Let's go around the horn here and see what our guests have to say about that. So, Kathy Friend, you've been a foster mom for more than 18 years. What kind of problems do people have trying to become a foster parent sometimes?
Well, there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through. You've got to do background checks. You've got to do fingerprinting. In your home, it doesn't have to be a large home. It doesn't have to be a perfect home. But every foster child you're going to have in that home has to have 40 square feet of space that is theirs, and that includes their bed, where they keep their clothes, and so forth. You've got to go through health inspections. You've got to go through the fire department inspection every year. You've got to take the classes to begin with to even get licensed, which it used to be Pride classes, which some agencies still teach. We're now switching to what's called the Presley Ridge class, and it's about 15 hours of classes that you have to take to become a foster parent. you don't have to be married. You don't have to have a life partner. You can be single. You have to be able to support yourself. And as Mona was saying, and I appreciate your call, Mona, there are people out there doing it for the money.
What does it mean, for the money?
Well, it's kind of hard to do now because the rules have changed as to how many kids you can have in your home. But it used to be people would take in 8-10 foster children, and at $23 a day per child, you add that up, comes out to a nice amount of money. And that's what they would live on. Those are few and far between now because the rules have changed, the policies for the state have changed, and you can't have that many kids in your home anymore. You can't have large group homes like that. So we're really getting to a point where that's not going to be something that's able to be done even by the cleverest person anymore. But for those of us that are doing it, as Mona stated, for the love and to help a child, there are some hoops to jump through, but it's not that hard. And I really hope that Mona will give it another chance and maybe call someone like the Children's Shelter and see if we can help her out and see if we can make her dream come true of helping a child.
Do you think that these hoops are burdensome, or is it just the state doing its due process, making sure that these children are going to end up in a home? They don't want to pass it off and give the child another problem, right?
I do not think it's burdensome. Yes, it does take time. Yes, most of our families these days are two-income families, so they are working all day, then they have to go and take classes. But the classes can be taken on Saturdays. I think it's important that the state do this. It has to be done, as you said, Dave, to protect these kids and make sure that they're in better homes than where they were, and they're safe, and they get the wraparound care that they need so that they can be productive citizens as they get older and age out of the system.
So Katie Ulz over at, you're the Executive Director, Texas Alliance for Child and Family Services. Are there programs, anything coming up where people can learn more?
Well, absolutely. And I also want to let any of your listeners who are interested in fostering or adopting to please look into local providers. The state is in desperate need of caregivers and foster parents for these children. And I want everyone to know that many of the children that are awaiting placements or awaiting adoptive loving families are older kids. They are sibling groups or children with special needs. So for those of you interested, please look online at the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services website or any of the local providers. I'm sure would be happy to talk to you. If you want to get involved from an advocacy perspective or just to learn more, on February 1st, next week, the Texas Alliance and a lot of our partners are having a day at the Capitol to celebrate our work, to celebrate what we do and the children that we serve and how lucky we all are to be doing this work. First Lady Abbott will be there. We'll have experts to be there, and it's going to be a really, I think, a good positive day where we talk about all these issues and how we can address them.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. The number is 210-614-8980. Joe is on the line. Joe, welcome to The Source, and you're on the air.
Thanks. Just want to say it's great that they're, you know, we've got a lot of good folks trying to make the system better. My wife and I fostered for a short time, and then we ended up adopting two beautiful little girls. But the whole reason we got in is just seeing, you know, watching on the news some of the horrific things that happens to some of these little ones. And so I just think maybe part of the conversation should be looking at some of those initial causes, with the legislature and with the community, you know, to kind of take care of some of the initial reasons why these kids end up in the system in the first place.
All right, Joe, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. So why do these kids end up in a foster care system, Katie?
Well, I think common themes that we see in all of our families are there's four things. There's domestic violence, there's mental health, there's substance abuse, and there's poverty. And oftentimes there's combinations of any of those factors. Those are issues that plague communities. They're not easy to solve. Bexar County and San Antonio has a lot of resources available. Other areas of the state do not.
And it varies. If you look down at the state and you try to figure out where the problems are it's going to be urban versus rural? Is there a pattern? What can we tell by looking at the state itself where the resources need to go? Is it just, and you'd be surprised where some of these problems exist? You know, it's anywhere and everywhere.
I think so. I think there probably are some variations around the state, particularly with regard to access to services and access to help that people need. I think you tend to see less availability in the rural areas and more availability in the urban areas. But sometimes navigating those systems is really challenging. If you don't know who to call or where the front door is, it can be very difficult for families. Our membership, our providers, are experts at that and help children and families that we work with try to navigate those complex systems.
But it seems like they're realizing up in Austin that they need the foster care redesign, as they're calling it, for SB 11, that they cannot separate the decision-making from the service delivery, that needs to be happening at the same location, like at the San Antonio, Texas Children's Shelter that you operate, Annette.
Yes, and I think that speaks back to the case management portion of care. You know, we've got a redesign initiative going on in Fort Worth that's doing a wonderful job. They're getting ready to go into phase two. They've been able to show some wonderful outcomes, and I think we can only anticipate that things will continue to see good outcomes, but they need to be given the responsibility of that case, of those children, so that they can make the appropriate decisions, they can make the appropriate placements, and get the right services.
Another caller with Karen. And Karen, you're on The Source. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm an attorney, and I work with children with special needs. And, in fact, I work for families. And one of the things I did for a long time were CPS cases. And I was very concerned because I was listening to some of the comments about caring about these children. But I had one case where the child really needed additional help. CPS agreed they needed additional help. And the judge approved me to file a due process hearing against the school district on the basis of what the CPS had said in court and upon, you know, the fact the child truly, truly needed more emotional help through the school district. I went into the hearing, and the day of the hearing, CPS called me and said, oh, my supervisor told me we can't testify against one state agency, can't testify against another. And I'm going, not looking for you to testify. I'm looking for you to tell me what she needs. And they said, we can't do that. So the day of the hearing, so we lost the hearing, needless to say. But the thing about that is that a couple of years later, she was on the front page for murdering her two children. And I think it's tragic that there's not support for the attorneys who are working for CPS and trying to help the children.
Right.
And after that one, I really kind of stopped doing the cases. But we do work with all the children with special needs in San Antonio.
Karen, thank you so much for calling in. So I think she really brings up an interesting point in her story, because we see these cases all the time. And it's like when we read to pick up the paper, watch the 10 o'clock news locally, and it's a horrible thing to happen to a child here in San Antonio. They're tied to a tree, or things happen to them, and it's just like, oh my, how does this happen? How does this happen? And people are outraged, and they demand a reason, some sort of action. And it's because it's all of these things happening around us all of the time, and they finally bubble up and grab our attention when it's a little child, and then there's a crazy murder like the Karen referred to in that call. And so the best solution is to keep that from happening again, is to provide these services and pay for them at an adequate rate, so that we can have a system that is self-sustaining, and that we probably don't have to see those headlines and be jarred as we read our morning paper or watch the 10 o'clock news before we go to bed at night. We can try and at least, you know, have some sort of sense of reasonable insanity in Texas. And I want to thank all of y'all for what you're doing. And real quickly, Kathy, do you ever hear from those kids that you foster?
Yes, I do. In fact, we have four that we see almost on a monthly basis that live here in town and were adopted by families here in town. Others we hear from at Christmas time and birthdays. And it's great to hear from them and see how well they're doing.
Wonderful. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.